Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2018. Lecture 23, delivered on April 23, 2018. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 2.
Today, Review for Exam 2. Before I do that, let me give you just a quick review over the markets for the day, which is generally something that I do every day, so it might mean that I could be asking something, oh God, which means I might ask something about it on an exam. Adam, good day or bad day? You know what? So it wasn't just me. Okay, good. That's encouraging. Now, good day or bad day? Not really exciting at all. It's quiet, and that's a good thing. Would you describe the markets recently, sir, as being volatile or quiet over the past year to date? Has it been a volatile market or a quiet market?
More quiet than volatile.
What's your judgment? If I asked that and you said that, then you would get a zero for that question. As I had told you in previous lectures, this is one of the most volatile markets we've seen in recent times because there's so much uncertainty. Now, these two columns right here are the 7 and the 10-year. Sir, what do you see? Don't look at your computer. Look at this computer here. What do you see?
For today?
Yes. You need to get really ready for this exam. What do you see, sir?
There's a 5 basis points between the two.
5 basis points spread. Is that an increase or a decrease over this semester that I've been showing you?
It's a decrease.
Yeah, is it going straight toward a decrease or is it going slowly?
It's slow because then it flattens off for a while.
Yeah, it gets quiet. The spread drops a little bit, then it holds, drops a little bit, and it holds. Do you happen to remember what the spread was when we last came together on Wednesday?
That was 5.
Yes, so we're still holding at 5 basis points spread, and it's as I had said, it's going to hang there for a while probably. Is it time to call recession, sir?
Not yet.
Why not? What do I have
because
to see?
The 7-year has to be above the 10-year.
Excellent, excellent. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear you talk about something. I'm going to ask you something about why I waste my time, or your time, I should say, not wasting my time, why I'm wasting your time spending every day showing you these kinds of charts to get you aware of the environment in which you are now functioning and show me that you understand what I've been showing you and why that's relevant to actually your own future. Let me kill that, all of that, and turn on the lights here. Well, I guess I could just put the exam up on the overhead for you to see. Oh, okay, I won't. 4 questions worth 25 points each, 5 points for grammar, spelling, and punctuation. Read the rubric if you haven't read it already. It's in ReggieNet, and it's also, I believe, in my finance lab, too. But I hold you to more accuracy on this exam than on the last exam. However, as I've told you, generally the average is a little higher on this one than it is on exam 1. and then the average is considerably higher on exam. On the final, it's not considerably, but it's even higher on the final exam. I'm going to give you some suggestions. Now, this isn't everything that I could ask, but this is a good representation, and I won't. It's not verbatim what I would ask on the exam necessarily. But then once I've gone through what I think you should know, you ask me questions, and I'll tell you whether or not you've hit something that I haven't mentioned, and or I'll tell you, no, I'm not going to ask you about that on this exam. So this is participatory engagement with me starting the ball rolling. Why does the capital structure of a firm matter? Why does the capital structure of a firm matter to that firm? What is meant by the market premium? Now, this doesn't mean that you write a formula or an algebraic expression. It means that you explain to me what is meant. Provide a way that you could create a well-diversified portfolio. Why would you choose this way? And what is the downside of this way? Why would you choose this way, and what is the downside of this way? You have been given the opportunity. You didn't flinch at all. I'm impressed. You have been given the opportunity to participate in your company's employee stock option plan, ESOP. Have you heard of ESOPs before? A lot of companies do this where you can buy stock out of your payroll with a payroll deduction. You can buy stock in our company. They give you maybe even a discount on the market price per share. And you could actually participate in this ESOP. And you get a little discount on the price of the stock by doing so. Why would you be wary of doing this? Why would you be cautious? Now, don't get me wrong on this question. I'm not asking you to speculate on how good or bad this company is. Well, this company probably sucks, and that's why they're doing it. No, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something that's a broader financial principle. That doesn't mean you necessarily would say no to it, but at the same time, there is a downside. I have taught you this downside over and over again to doing something like that. Targeted purchases. Yes. Of participating in this ESOP. What is the internal rate of return? And why can't, and in what circumstance can it mislead you? Or would it mislead you? What is the internal rate of return? Now, that's a definition, a dead-on. That's 12, let me finish what I'm doing here. 12 words for the first part. What is the internal rate of return? Now, the second part of this is, how can the internal rate of return, or when can the internal rate of return mislead you? Now go back in your notes and look for pictures of things that aren't straight lines, that look like parabolas. There's also a discussion of it in the textbook, too. I'm a little bothered. I didn't notice that in a couple of the in one question in the quiz for that chapter, they actually have you calculate internal rate of return, and they deal with that problem, but they don't address it as particularly a problem. It's kind of odd, but anyway. Give two key differences between the stock market and the bond market. Give two key differences between the stock market and the bond market. You are looking at the financial statements of a certain company, and you see that they have a very high ratio of cash and marketable securities to total assets. Okay, here's this is the setup sentence again. You are reviewing the financial statements of a public company, and you see that this company has a very high ratio of cash and marketable securities relative to total assets. In other words, from that ratio stuff we did in the early, this company has a very high burn ratio, which is one of the old school ones they don't teach in the books anymore. What would be the downside of this high liquidity? And what would be the advantage of it? Again, what would be the downside of this high degree of liquidity? And what would be the advantage of it? Go back in your notes. We talked about this. There is always a downside and an upside to liquidity. A company is going. It has announced that it will make a public offering of common stock. Again, a company has announced that it will make an offering, a public offering of common stock. Give two reasons why you would be suspicious. I think I gave you a total, there's three reasons. Remember, good citizens, it's about cynicism. Not necessarily cynicism, but being objective in how you look at things. As a general rule, debt is cheaper than equity. When would this not be the case for a company? As a general rule, debt is cheaper than equity. First of all, because it has the prior claim, so it's less risky than the equity. And the debt also is tax deductible, the interest is, so that would make it cheaper too. But eventually, debt becomes more expensive than equity. Why? I mean, most companies don't want to find out just how much more expensive it can get, but clearly there's a reason. That's what optimal capital structure is all about. Why is it that when or under what circumstances that does debt become more expensive than equity? You have done analytics on returns, year-to-year returns on a certain stock price. And you find that those returns are quite volatile. Does this necessarily mean that this is a high risk security? Why or why not? Again, does this necessarily mean that this is a high risk security? Why or why not? Those are my questions. Now it's your turn. Again, that's not necessarily everything that could be on there. And it's up to you to ask me a few questions to find out what else could be or what else won't be. Because I'll tell you, no, I'm not going to ask that. Talk to me. Yeah. Oh, his question was this. I showed you a couple of different dimensions that are related to the beta of bonds. You notice that it had to do with the beta relative to the term of the bond, and then the beta relative to the, what was it? The investment grade of the bond was the other one? Okay. No, I won't. However, that was almost one that I did put on the exam, but I thought, well, I'll hold off. Maybe that'll be on the final too, where I'm trying to get broad stroke, brush strokes of the course. Yeah. No. Short selling stocks. Short stocks, that's like short cake or short bread, which isn't bad. Wafers that are so good, the shortbread ones. Anyway. Yes?
Fixed versus variable costs?
Oh, no. That one, by the way, is fair game for the final, though. That goes along with the whole concept of break-even analysis. And that is definitely fair game on the final. So you've had killed off three possible avenues here in just a short amount of time. Yes. Okay, the diversifiable risk, that's hugely important to the course. And that would be the final exam where I will find out I guarantee you, I will find out whether you understand the difference between the two and how they are connected through the variance, through the standard deviation of the stock. Yeah.
So last Monday we talked about reasons not to buy stocks from a personal recommendation, like we went over the big list. Is that the same thing as ESOPs?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the reasons why you would be suspicious of a friend, some of those are the same reasons you would be not so excited about an ESOP. Now, remember when you were talking about, there's some that have to do with your friend that aren't necessarily applicable, and I'll even be a little more specific here. When you get a recommendation from a friend that he says this is a hot stock, that could mean that he just got lucky or that he is gaming you. And we're not, and I don't want you to get the impression that an ESOP is a gaming situation where the company's trying to sucker you. However, it is still not in your best interest. And that is one of those is the same reason that it's not in your best interest to listen to a friend who says, buy a couple of stocks. And that's the great tragedy of things like Robinhood and those kinds of services. They are teaching extraordinarily bad investment habits. It's sort of like when you teach a kid how to eat Carolina Reaper peppers. It's fun to watch him hop around and call for mommy, but when he's 40 years old and he has no duodenum and most of his upper colon is gone, then it turns out that that wasn't a good idea. In this case, there is one very specific reason why you should not listen to your friends give you hot stock tips, and it's the same reason why you should be relatively at least standoffish about ESOPs. And I'll even tell you, remember, did I tell you the story of Enron? I think I mentioned Enron. I mean, I had friends who had worked for Enron. It was a massive oil company based down in Houston. And it basically, the top management was a bunch of scoundrels, liars, scammers, thieves. They were bleeding off the company's cash flow and putting it into offshore accounts of their own. They did all kinds of things. Now, for years, even before these scoundrels had gotten involved, Enron had an ESOP. Everyone working in that company, their retirement plan, I swear, everyone, their whole retirement plan was based on the ESOP of buying Enron stock and putting it into a portfolio. So when Enron completely collapsed, the stock price went to zero, you had people who'd been working there 10, 20, 30, 40 years who had nothing. They lost everything of their retirement. And yes, part of that was because of those scoundrels. No question about that. Every one of those son of a bitches should have burned in hell. Come to think of it, they probably will, and they'll go looking for oil and gas down there. But anyway, the other part of it, though, was it was bad investment strategy, and these people were not educated in finance. They thought this, oh, yeah, Enron's going to take care of me. I took care of them all these years. And I even had one friend. He just offed himself. He killed himself. He did it in a very, very creative way. So that his wife could cash in on the life insurance policy. To die that way, what a cool thing. But anyway, so keep that in mind when you're thinking about an answer to this question. The world is full of scoundrels, thieves, liars, nose pickers, dog beaters, cat stranglers, and generally speaking, Rastafarians. And a few communists and Nazis. So what you have to do is prepare and for the worst. And that certainly doesn't mean listening to a friend who says buy hot stocks or something like that. Does that help a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay, go.
So with internal rate of return, depending on the data, if the sign switches...
That's that. Don't go any further. I don't want you giving everyone an answer, but you got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. Payback method?
No.
Will you talk anything about weak form, semi-strong?
No, that is something that would be very game for the final. The weak, semi-strong, and strong form of the market, of the efficient market hypothesis. Yes?
Free cash flow?
No. I use it all the time. And another one that I will not ask you is I brought up total enterprise value. And I won't bring that up on this exam either. I mean, these are all important concepts. Go.
Risk variation?
You mean frequency versus severity? Or something? You're saying, yeah, is that the one you're talking about? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, no. No, my little dragons did their duty. And I almost burned myself to death. Yes? Well, yeah, I told you that it was on there. No. CAPM is in this exam, but I gave you a question that's directly related to the CAPM. Yeah.
Sensitivity analysis?
No. Do you see what it is? Would you like to tell me what it is, where the CAPM is in this exam? You don't see it? I'll give you a hint. Market premium. Okay. Okay. Is that what you just said? Okay? Yeah, okay. Good. What else? I've been pretty thorough, and your questions are good because they've cut off avenues that you need to stay focused, stay frosty, and just focus on what I've given you and anything I've said yes to that you've asked about.
Oh, wait a second.
I'm not leaving here. I got all night, folks. Don't forget to tip the waiters and the waitresses during the intermissions of my comedy routine. Go.
Hurdle rate,
no. I did used to do that, but... people seem to understand it, but they have a real hard time explaining it. And so I backed off doing that question. Yeah.
Price discrimination unit margin.
No. Again, anything about break-even analysis, I'll leave that for the final. Go.
Optimal portfolio construction.
Say it.
Optimal to portfolio construction, or is that more for the side?
Hey, that's more for the showing me that you understand why ESOPs are not a good idea. If you give me the right answer for that, you are a long way toward understanding and being able to at least apply as an individual investor the idea of optimal portfolio construction and even the basics of portfolio control theory. Yeah.
The number of stocks that kind of can help me diversify.
That's actually in one of the questions I asked you about. Give a way that you can construct your own construct a well-diversified portfolio. Yeah. Remember, I gave you three ways that it could be done. Breathe, woman. You're holding frozen there. Okay. No. There are three different ways, and all you have to do is give me one of the three ways, and what is the upside and what's the downside of this way? Yeah.
What about anything with weighted cost of capital?
That has everything to do with optimal capital structure,
And
it has everything to do with one of the questions that I think it was the first question.
So we did a lot of
I want you to be able to tell me why I see a firm has this much debt and this much equity relative to total assets. And I want you to tell me, is that just a random thing that happens, or is there a very specific directed managerial choice that is continuing policy to achieve that? Anything else you got? Yes.
First, diversifiable risk versus non-diversifiable risk.
Yeah. Again, that goes back to that. That'll be on the final. I will hit that hard. Although it does have a lot to do with the question that I asked when I said you found that the returns to a stock are highly volatile. That is where I am testing you on your understanding of that distinction between those two risks. Go.
Like market discipline versus government regulation?
We're going to stay away from that. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's... You basically, if you understand what I just said to you, sir, you can nail that question to the wall. Okay. What else do you have for me? Yeah.
What types of questions did you ask us about the market?
Well, I'm certainly that question, what is the difference, two key differences between the bond and the stock market? That clearly is an important consideration when you're talking about overall market. I could very well also ask you about the volatility recently, as I brought up. We are in an extraordinarily volatile market. That has been noted by everything from Bloomberg to Business Week to Fortune Magazine. Even the less technical publications talk about the extraordinary volatility. What's interesting, though, is that, as you noted, it is a very quiet market, and it has been for a couple of days. There's an old saying, when the forest is quiet, it's too quiet. And that's, in other words, if it's quiet in the forest, there's probably a bear who has gotten himself comfortable and waited for you to come along to be his snack. So you might want to keep that in mind. But that last few days are not indicative of this market overall. And when you have a wild ride happening and suddenly everything gets quiet, have any of you ever been in a hurricane? It gets absolutely downright nice when you're in the eye of the hurricane. The sky gets blue, it's beautiful, and then all of a sudden here comes a dog past you and a house and a couple of house trailers, which I don't worry about. It cleans up the neighborhood. But that's just the way it is. The quiet we're seeing now might be the quiet before a storm. I've seen it in the past. I've seen markets like this in the past, when everyone gets real quiet and then all of a sudden all the twitching and the heebie-jeebies that were being hidden inside come popping out. What else? Don't go overboard with your answers. Stay clean. Give me a clean, sharp answer. If it's a definitional type of question, like, for example, what was the definitional one that I... What was it? Oh, what is internal rate of return? That's a sentence. Don't go five times around the barn to get to the outhouse. I think I did mention I actually have a bullshit stamp, and I got it re-inked for you guys this at the beginning of this semester, and I haven't used it yet. I was told to use it sparingly because I can hurt feelings anymore saying your answer is bullshit, but I still might use it anyway. I keep it beside me, and Phineas keeps pushing it toward me, mostly because he pushes anything toward me that looks like a toy. Anything else? You don't need to share it with me here.
No, but I'm saying last time when it came to a certain definition, you were looking for a particular word.
That's right. I'm looking for a specific. I'm not looking for a Zen Buddhist approach. I am not looking for a, what is one of those fancy, someone who gives me a mumble rap about it. I want the dead on answer, okay? And I know exactly. How many years have I been teaching the same subject? You think I don't know my own scripts? 37 years, by the way. I know exactly what I told you. And it's also documented in the podcast, too. What else? Okay, that's enough. Go home.